This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
I just try to relieve my distress by watching guys like Colbert and Stewart. And I think if they did not exist, if we didn't have the comfort of those entertainers, we would be better off ultimately. We would be in a greater state of awareness about the kind of trouble that we're in.
When Jon Stewart recently announced his plan to leave The Daily Show, the fake news show that steadily become the go-to news source for millions of Americans, one fan of the show, Steve Almond, chose to see it as a positive development. Almond, a humorist and author of popular books such as Candy Freak, Against Football, and Rock and Roll Will Save Your Life, believes that Americans have come to lean on savvy, insightful comedic news shows like The Daily Show and The Colbert Report as a sort of crutch, an all-too-often substitute for getting off the couch and making an actual difference in the real world. This week on Sea Change Radio, Steve Almond and I discuss what Jon Stewart's absence from our nightly routine might mean for the environmental movement, and whether screens in general help or hinder activism and systemic change. I'm joined once again on Sea Change Radio by author Steve Almond. His latest book is Against Football. He's also now the co-host of Dear Sugar Radio, which is a podcast that he co-hosts with Cheryl Strayed. Steve, welcome back to Sea Change Radio.
Good to be with you.
So the reason I wanted to talk to you again was you just wrote a piece for Salon entitled Jon Stewart Became Our Opiate, Time to Confront Tea Party 1% Without Punchlines. Why don't you give us the basic thesis of the piece first?
Sure. Well, I've actually been writing about this for quite a while as somebody who's trying to balance being a humorist, basically, oftentimes, even though I write about serious stuff, with sort of an admiration for Jon Stewart and Colbert and all these kind of fake news guys who are such sharp critics and so good at pointing out the corruption of our political and media classes, with this underlying feeling of distress that essentially the moral backstop of our culture at this point are comedians, and that part of what Stewart and Colbert depend on, frankly, they're sort of parasites on the dysfunction of our civic institutions. And what they do, I think, for environmentalists and other people who are concerned about the common crises of state that we face is they essentially serve a therapeutic role quite openly. What they do is they take anger and distress that we feel at problems that are quite serious and are really bearing down on us, and they convert those into laughter. We laugh at the absurd villains, and we therefore feel a kind of internal sense of pressure being released. And I think it actually serves to deflate the activist impulses that the American left should be feeling. The pieces that I've been writing, and this last one in particular, is trying to say, hey, folks, if a comedian is the person, if a bunch of comedians who only want from you your laughter are the ones who are the most serious moral voices in our culture, we're in trouble. And this actually dates back to the cultural critic Neil Postman, who wrote this great book that is like all really good cultural criticism. It's continued to become more prescient and more insightful the further we march towards self-annihilation. He wrote this book, Amusing Ourselves to Death, 30 years ago. And he actually recognized that there was going to be a time that these shows would arise, these parody shows. He literally, if you read it, it's this eerie feeling of, oh my God, he recognizes where this is all headed. But the central message of that book was, look, what happens when you live in a culture whose standard of value is whether or not something can grab and hold the public's attention, and in which anything, serious literature or political debate, serious ideas, are likely to be compromised or marginalized. Ultimately, what he was asking is, to whom do we complain and when and in what tone of voice when serious discourse dissolves into giggles? What is the antidote to a culture's being drained by laughter? And this is not a criticism of Jon Stewart. It's a criticism of me and us. I feel like a lot of what happens when we watch these programs is we are drained. Our culture is drained by laughter. The activist impulses which are involved feeling agitated and distressed and that moral wrongs need to be righted. That is literally, that energy is drained when we passively sit back and consume Colbert or Stewart or any of the other programs, and then as good distressed liberals somehow feel, and I feel this myself in my own mind and heart, that I have somehow taken action, that I have performed a civic action by sitting and having somebody represent to me the absurdity and the outrage that one should feel at the Koch brothers or whoever else it is. But that's not really how it works. You have to actively become engaged in a political process if you want to go up against a very organized, corporate organized and funded right wing that is at the state level, at the local level, and at the national level, working the real channels of power in order to make sure that profit is put before moral common sense.
So this complacency that you're talking about, I can't help but think that it's not necessarily a subset of this type of television as much as maybe we're just complacent people.
Well, I think what's happened is that America has become totally dedicated to the conversion of every discussion, every cultural narrative into entertainment. And this is really what Postman was writing about. What happens when morality, when civic engagement, when all the rest of it is just the fodder for entertainment? When our feeling is that we're essentially consumers rather than citizens.
We're water cooler discussers rather than people who would go march in Selma.
Well, sure, but it's not even getting to the point of the water cooler. I mean, we're all basically on our screens consuming whatever story happens to be going on. So, you know, it could be Jon Stewart. You know, earlier this week, there was this story about Brian Williams and this big hurrah about whether, you know, his credibility being shot because he lied about how heroic he was. You know, we are really getting distracted from really big issues that are bearing down on us, because what we get through the media filter and what we seek out, actually, because we create that media filter, we vote with our eyes, we vote with our attention, and we pay attention to this stuff. And it's always funneled into whether it's stimulative and entertaining as opposed to whether it's really morally important. Brian Williams and whether he lied, it's not really important. What's important is that he took part in selling a war that was wrong and disastrous on a whole bunch of different levels, moral, economic, human, you know, and that's why he has a credibility problem. And that's what needs to be talked about, not whether he told some macho, you know, lies about his time in war.
I was watching some of the older clips of him when he was apparently telling the truth about this, and he was using the royal we, and I couldn't help but think, the crux of the issue is that these reporters are now saying we. They're embedded with these people and they're cheerleaders. They're not doing their job.
Right. And so, you know, when I'm looking at whatever the latest story is, my job, I guess, or what I like to try to do is take a big step back and say, well, now, Jon Stewart is leaving. What did Jon Stewart really mean? Yeah, we get it. He's really funny. He's really good at his job. He's really sharp. What does it mean that the quote-unquote most trusted man in America isn't a politician or an activist, it's a comedian on TV? What does that mean? What does that say about how we spend our time and energy? And of course, the answer is that we would rather treat morality as a sort of another branch of entertainment than as something that truly, really and truly should be causing us to seek out moral progress. Collective agitation in the past has actually led to moral progress. It's the reason women have the vote. It's the reason that we no longer have slavery. It's the reason that certain egalitarian policies of the New Deal in particular were established after the crash in 1929 and the Depression. Citizen activism brought about the Civil Rights Act, and it helped to bring about the end to the Vietnam War. The outrage over Watergate led to campaign finance reform. It's been stripped away. But that is actually what public outrage and media investigation led to. There have been these instances of moral progress. And you line that up with what's happening today and you say, is that even possible? Are we all so distracted by our need to be entertained and to have everything converted into a sort of short-term stimulative scandal as opposed to really sizing up what our real common crises are and seeing our own role, not as people who watch it on TV, but actually get out and at a local, state, or national level involve ourselves in the political process and in the activist process.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/SeaChangeRadio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to author Steve Almond. So, Steve, I'm assuming you don't have these numbers because I couldn't find them, but maybe you do. You don't happen to know the voting rates of Daily Show, Colbert Report viewers, do you?
You know, I don't. I absolutely don't. But I mean, I would assume that they're probably pretty politically engaged because they're, after all, seeking out The Daily Show and The Colbert Report as opposed to reality TV about hairdressers who are having a meltdown, right? So they're interested in the moral theater, the corruption of our political and media systems.
Well, I was researching some of this, and what I found basically is it fit the narrative of whatever the author was looking for. So in 2008, when people were pretty excited about the Obama candidacy, the 18 to 49-year-old demographic was getting out in record numbers, and they attributed that to all the people who are watching The Daily Show and Colbert Report. But by 2010 and the 2014 midterms, they were saying, well, these young people still aren't getting out to vote. So I don't think that the effect of the Comedy Central 11 o'clock to 12 o'clock on the East Coast time slot is really affecting our elections as much as having a strong personality leading a movement. And that's not what Colbert and Jon Stewart are there for, as you've already mentioned. But my question then, when you look at some of the more successful environmental movements of the last few years, I can't help but think about the Keystone XL pipeline, which, while it's an important issue, is probably not the fundamental issue of our time, but it's rallied people like no other in terms of environmental issues right now. Do you think that's because of a strong personality like Bill McKibben at the helm, or what do you attribute it to?
Well, I think it's something that's concrete, and I think it's in a certain way, it gives people a common narrative that they can focus on and say, there is this pipeline that is representative of our kind of, we'll do anything for cheap energy, cheap oil, and environmental standards be damned, and state regulation and federal regulation be damned. It's a focal point, in other words, because one of the crises that the environmental movement has, it seems to me, is how do you talk about something that is so big? And what you have to do is you have to really bring it down to a human level and concretize it in some way. I think that's what the pipeline has done, is it's sort of embodied the fact that there are these forces that want business as usual. Let's wring profit out of, you know, chewing up whatever non-renewable oil reserves we can get out of the tar sands or wherever it is, versus people are saying, hold on, fundamentally, we have got to look at what's happening with the planet. And I have to say, as somebody who lives in Boston, like, you know, the weather story, it's always the storm. It's not, why is weather becoming more extreme? What do atmospheric scientists have to say about the way in which, you know, sea levels might be more moisture as sea level, you know, as the sea evaporates into the atmosphere. Is this a reason why we're seeing these heavy snowfalls? I don't know if that's scientifically valid, but I'm certainly asking that question. Why are we seeing more extreme weather? What does it mean? How do we concretize these big ideas of climate change, right? And the truth of the matter is, that's what people actually need, is a concrete narrative that they can, where they can see that this is basically business and convenience versus a certain amount of long-term self-interest.
I think that's the key, is the long-term versus the short-term.
Right.
Like when you compare the 20, 30 years that they talk about Miami could be underwater versus the Keystone XL pipeline coming up in front of the president's veto pen in a few months kind of thing. That can move people. Similarly, you see a drop in oil prices. What do people do? They take the short-term view and they go out and buy SUVs in record numbers.
Right. And this is the, you know, this is the problem. This is why it would take a really intrepid political establishment supported by a media establishment to say, actually, now is the moment where we need to have a gas tax that makes fuel, because that's really the only thing that will work in a society that is as capitalistic as ours, is you have to make it more expensive. You have to de-incentivize, and gas tax is the perfect opportunity. Get rid of the national debt. And of course, people say, well, politically, that's impossible. Well, it's only impossible because we are cynical enough to say, well, that's just never going to happen. It's like me sort of saying, well, what are the moral corruptions of football? And people saying, you know, that football, people never stop watching football. And I sit there and go, really? It's just a game. It's just a form of entertainment. I get that it's important to people, but it's not like it's blood transfusions that's going to save somebody's life. It's just something that we feel we ascribe a great deal of importance to, that's ultimately a form of entertainment.
40 years ago, we couldn't envision boxing being just a marginal sport, right?
Right. So I think that what I see in Colbert and Stewart and those guys is that they're symptomatic. Every night, good people who are distressed about the state of the media and our political system and why we're not addressing these big issues and why people can lie and be openly hypocritical and psychopathically greedy are sort of getting away with it. And what we do is we laugh at their jokes about it. But that's very different. I mean, if you look at everything that Stewart did to address a guy like Jim Cramer and sort of, you know, say, look, you're just a scammer and this whole stock market thing is a Ponzi scheme, or to make mincemeat out of Tucker Carlson or the Koch brothers, that doesn't constitute political action to see somebody dress those guys down. And the evidence is clear. Our free press remains devoted to for-profit stimulation. The bubble of free market evangelism continues to inflate. Corporations go right on amassing political power. The Koch brothers, in a certain way, they should thank Jon Stewart, because Jon Stewart actually relieves our, you know, punches them around so that we can laugh about it. And they've still got $1 billion to spend on the next election cycle. Do you see what I mean?
Absolutely. You're talking about the gas tax, for example, which is a piece that I think, it's a third rail apparently in politics, but it's sound policy. Sound policy does not make for good entertainment. For example, with this Brian Williams or the Deflategate thing around the Patriots, those were the things that people turned to get Jon Stewart's smart takes on. It's the pablum of the day. That doesn't mean that he doesn't have his heart in the right place and he wouldn't want a gas tax. It's just that doesn't make for good entertainment.
Right, and that's not his job. And his whole thing is, my show is idealistic, he said, but ultimately impotent. I mean, it's not like he's trying to pretend to be this prophetic figure. What's most revealing about our feelings towards Stewart and Colbert and these other guys is the way in which we are so desperate to see them as messiahs. We're so desperate to see that there's somebody who is calling out these abundant corruptions and hypocrisies. But it's one thing to sort of make jokes, crack jokes about them. And it's another thing to say, actually, we're a mature democracy. Why is it's not acceptable to me as a citizen that we're making so many bad decisions at so many different levels about stuff that are vitally important to the survival of our children and grandchildren. That's not okay. And I think the difficulty is that we're in America, we're not okay with people being angry and upset and agitated. That's part of what drove that kind of grievance and rage, is what drove the Tea Party movement. And to some extent, it's what was driving what was happening with the 99% movement. But ultimately, a lot of what I feel as a kind of good, obedient liberal is, you know, what I do rather than getting up, getting off the couch and marching out into the streets, literally or metaphorically, is I just try to relieve my distress by watching guys like Colbert and Stewart. And I think if they did not exist, if we didn't have the comfort of those entertainers, we would be better off ultimately. We would be in a greater state of awareness about the kind of trouble that we're in.
Farewell to the good times as the sun goes down. I'll stand here on the shoreline you're doing fine.
Sea Change Radio is made possible by support from Presidio Graduate School in San Francisco, offering MBA and MPA degrees in sustainable management. Learn more at presidio.edu.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to author Steve Almond. In the Steve Almond perfect world, what kind of action can you envision making a tectonic shift in our political awareness?
Well, I think part of it has to come from people viewing themselves as citizens rather than consumers, and as citizens rather than taxpayers. I don't think that tectonic change takes place until there are enough people who are really in a state of distress in one way or another about the state of the country, that they are choosing to get off of their screens, turn away from this sort of entertainment industrial complex, and consider in the long term what we really need to do to try to solve common crises of state. I mean, the best thing that could happen would be for somebody to just pull a giant plug and all of our screens would go black and we would literally just have to deal with one another and not escape into our screens, which I think are the portal through which we find the quick hits of entertainment and stimulation and sort of try to reach out and connect to other people in a very abstract digital way that doesn't have to do with actually seeing how your neighbor is doing right next door to you. I mean, if people want to have that real feeling of connectedness, you need to really be interdependent in a very fundamental way. This was the idea behind the Back to the Land movement, that people could see that industrialization and the sort of cult of convenience was ultimately disabling our empathy and our ability to morally imagine the suffering of other people and our responsibility to them. The Steve Almond utopia is actually quite an unpleasant place, because it's a recognition that we are in a lot of trouble as a species and we need to do something about it. And there's not even football. That's the really lousy thing. There's no football.
Stop it. You're killing us all. So, so you're unplugging our TVs. That's fine. See, I look at it in a more optimistic view when it comes to screens. I realize that our populace is largely somnambulant, but when you point to, let's say, the Arab Spring or Occupy Wall Street, these are movements that were not possible without quote-unquote screens. We need to be connected, and we're more connected. If you're a fan of history, you realize that we can be connected in a way that man hasn't seen before, and so that's very powerful. And we have problems that are as big as man has seen before in terms of climate change. So we need that connectedness. So it's just a question of finding the modes and the mediums to get people to act positively.
Well, absolutely. I mean, look, the screens are just a tool. And just like in a certain sense, Jon Stewart is just a TV, The Daily Show was just a TV show. Where I'm trying to sort of steer the conversation is, it's about how we use it. And for the most part, what I see and experience in my own sort of interaction with screens is, it's something I do when I'm lonely, when I'm in need of distraction, when there's some source of distress, just the difficulty of the human arrangement that I'm struggling with. And it's a more difficult thing to turn away from the screen and be in that moment of sadness or feeling sort of impotent before the larger crises or struggling with being a parent or a husband, whatever it is, or mortality, like the big dark stuff that's looming underneath all this tinsel. That's the reason that I feel like I turn to the screens, to get away from the bad data of the heart. But we should be facing that. And that's part of what leading an examined life is about. And I'm not saying that Jon Stewart is, you know, he's terrible and he's a distraction from all that. He's amazing and funny and like has given a lot of people a lot of pleasure and relieved a lot of distress. But we're in a moment historically where, whether it's the environmental movement or the way that our political system is sort of monetized and run by money or whatever rubric you choose, we need to wake up morally and start to take real action, not show up for a variety show rally that's kind of a TV event, but show up because we still are struggling with poverty and our environmental policy is completely suicidal. And, you know, for all the other reasons that allegedly we started the experiment, the great experiment in democracy that America represents. Like we had something in mind here to build a more perfect union, and not a more entertaining union, not a funnier union, not a go with the flow kind of union, but a more perfect one, as in moral perfection. That at least should be the goal. And we are all, the price of our citizenship, it should be understood, is not just sort of getting on your screen in the morning and seeing what's trending on Twitter, but figuring out, well, what's really happening in our democracy? What are the problems that are bearing down on us and our children and our children's children? And what should we be doing about those that doesn't just involve passively consuming news or entertainment about them?
I agree then that we need to turn that into a positive, but I may disagree with the underlying assumption that these screens are a zero-sum medium. The thing that pops in my mind, for example, my wife and I, before we met, we were both politically active, and we actually met through the 2004 campaign. We were out volunteering in Florida. By 2008, we had a kid, and we couldn't really go for weeks at a time to get out the vote in Florida. So What we did was we created a website with Craig Newmark of Craigslist advising us. It was kind of a Match.com meets Craigslist meets Kiva. And basically, people could live vicariously through people that they would sponsor in terms of getting out the votes. So for example, when you get a call from the DNC or a candidate asking for money, you're just giving, let's say, $100 to that candidate. You don't know where it goes. So the impetus for this was, all right, well, what if we connect people with people for this? So let's say Steve Almond can go to a swing state like Virginia and work his tail off, and I have a little infant here and I can't do that. I'm going to give Steve Almond my frequent flyer miles to get to Virginia, and then I can track Steve's work and see how many doors he's knocked on and kind of see my money in action, and kind of you're getting a benefit from it and I'm getting a benefit from it, and we're working towards the same common goal, but we use those screens as a benefit. So that's a long way of saying we have to embrace the screens because they're here to stay. It's just a question of how do we embrace them? Do we passively embrace them, or do we actively embrace them?
Yeah, well, I think that's great. I mean, absolutely. As I say, the tool itself isn't what matters. It's the artisan. It's the person using it. And it's not a criticism of the tools themselves. They're morally neutral. It's how we use them. And that's the mind that I think I'm trying to address. But even more to the point, you've sort of saw that technology could help solve a real problem that would make it easier for people to feel and literally be politically engaged, even if they didn't have the time and opportunity to go rustle up the vote in a swing state. They could at least support that in a concrete way. I think that's fantastic. And the mindset there is an activist mindset. What can I do rather than what can I watch?
And I think that's the key. Author Steve Almond, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
It was my pleasure. Thanks, Alex.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by Fela Kuti, Brian Stoltz, and Ike Riley.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.